Today, listener, wham bam Zamperini. Not just a manager firing meanie. With Palermo sold for €10 to David Platt, I may be simplifying that a little. We look back at the crazy days of the Rosanera under Maurizio Zamperini. Pink shirts, cult players, P45s the lot. Oh, also, all the other news ahead of the big one this Friday, Juventus Inter. Hello, Gabriele Marcotti.
Hello.
Hello, James Horncastle.
Hello, James.
I'm looking forward to today. It's got a little bit of everything. Cult players, Viagra, my favourite Serie A goal of all time, I think. And it's all kind of prompted by this news of the sale of Palermo by Maurizio Zamperini, who's been its owner since 2002. The club bought by Global Future Sports Entertainment, an investment fund in London, or somebody they represent. London Fog, indeed, was how the Gazetta described it on Wednesday morning, because it's not entirely clear who's really behind this.
Might just be one entity involved in this takeover, because there was a press conference yesterday. Basically, David Platt, who is a consultant, flew in with this guy, Clive Richardson, and they just gave a series of one-word answers or no answers at all.
Oh, David Platt gave quite a lengthy answer in Italian, actually.
Noi siamo dall'Inghilterra, neanche io ho visto le partite, quindi io non posso entrare. Noi non possiamo entrare pensando che la squadra ha bisogno questo, la squadra ha bisogno questo. Per quello che abbiamo fatto questa gita, per venire qua.
Good to have Platy back in Italy. David Platt back in.
Yeah, because when you mentioned that, this propitiates one of my favorite David Platt media anecdotes.
Yeah.
It's my buddy Dave Clark, who does a darts on Sky.
Absolutely.
Back in the early days of Sky Sports News, he was hosting something and he had David Platt and he referred to him as Platy on the air. Then it goes to the break, and he said something to the effect of, only my mates call me Platy.
And you're not one of them.
That's right.
Are you one, James? I mean, you did so many skits with
we did skits,
David.
We? Well, anyway, David back in the day was a player at Sampdoria and then returned as a manager. He says, I'm here to help a hand, and he seemed a little bit as in the dark as to the details of the takeover as anybody. But there's so much. You know, when you start to kind of look back at what Zamperini's done and what Palermo did in his time as the owner, it's pretty amazing. Zamperini himself, now 77, signed off by saying,
"Ti si sente come un vedovo."
I feel like a widower, because it's been an intense relationship there, Gab.
It has, although this guy is such an oddball freak that, like, I kind of think that it's been intense, but this is the kind of stuff that keeps him alive. He thrives. He lives off of daily aggro and controversy and nothing simple and nothing straightforward with him. A little bit like your Portuguese friend at the Lowry. You know, like nothing is easy. Everything is hard fought. Every day is a struggle. And that's what Zamperini is.
Do we think he's done? Because
yeah, he's not a widower. You know that.
When was it? A couple of years ago? When was it? 4 or 5 years ago when he sold to nominally an American investment fund who took the unusual step of appointing a comedian, a tattooed pierced comedian. Do you remember?
Former MTV kind of presenter.
Well, he was on Le Iene, The Hyenas, which is a satirical news show in Italy. And he was a former presenter there, an American, I think, by birth. Paul Baccalini, was it?
Yeah.
And he was going to be the president. And he was there for 3 months. The Iene turned up and told him to get a tattoo, and he did. He got a tattoo of the club.
I thought it was Palermo Ultras who did that.
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
I thought it was
knocked on his hotel room door and kind of... You talk about fit and proper persons tests that various federations impose. This was their version of that. To show you're a real Palermitano or something like that, let's have a tattoo, which he went with, because he's got so many tattoos anyway, including one down there as well, urban legend has it. But he disappeared as quickly as he appeared.
Well, the money wasn't there, and so Zamperini took back control and has been looking for a buyer ever since, until he found... has announced this week, Gab, the Global Future Sports Entertainment.
So it just occurred to me that if you were, say, an elderly Italian man who didn't speak any English, but, you know, you could go and Google English words and put them together, this is precisely what you would call your company, hypothetically. Global Future Sports Entertainment. It's one of those things that means absolutely nothing and nobody's ever heard of.
If you wanted to spell out your vision for the club, that's pretty much what I'd call it. It's got global, it's got future, it's got sport, and above all, it's got entertainment. And if Palermo's been one thing under the oddball freak that is Zamperini, to borrow your expression, it has been entertaining. Italy famous for its colourful owners. He is kaleidoscopic. Let's go back to 2002 and the advent of Zamperini. Questa è la mia vita, se ho bisogno te lo dico, sono io che guido, io che vado fuori strada, sempre io che pago, non è mai successo che pagassero per me. It is 2002. How are you doing, listener? That's Ligabue. We're all listening to him with Questa è la mia vita. Rocking the summer soundtrack of many Italians. Palermo are down in Serie B. They've been down. They've been outside the top flight for 32 years. Franco Sensi, the man who brought the Scudetto back to Roma, has tried to rescue them but take them nowhere. And Maurizio Zamperini buys Franco Sensi's shares. Zamperini, of course, had been at Venezia where he'd had huge success as well, Gab.
Yeah, until he decided he... You like Palermo, and it's really sort of like the worst kind of, I don't know, old school chauvinist machismo, you know? It's like you're dating one girl, and then all of a sudden you just dump her because somebody who you think, ideally, it would be somebody you think is hotter, but in reality, it's somebody who you think simply has more money and that you can get more money from. Mm-hmm. And Zamperini being sort of the Lothario that he is, or potential Lothario. Certainly when it comes to football clubs, that's what he does.
There's a big Lothario section later on in today's Galazzo.
He does a whole bunch of, there's a whole bunch of transfers where essentially bad players go from Palermo to Venezia.
Well, also, I mean, they were
good players go the other way.
They were having pre-season in the same part of Italy. And he just decides one day to get a bus together and put 14 Venezia players on that bus with the coach and the sporting director, take them to where Palermo were having their pre-season and basically just dumped them there and saying, this is our new team. This is our new club. Brilliant. Roberto Pruzzo was the coach of Palermo at the time and was basically promptly shown the door after a day. And that's it. It sort of reminds me of like when an NFL team sort of up sticks from one city to the other and they just pack everything up in the middle of the night and then go somewhere else.
It's global and it's the future.
He also ended up bankrupting Venezia in the process, basically stripping all the assets and sticking them.
Well, he'd found the bankrupt, I suppose, in his defence. They were down in Cidue and he picked them up, fused them with their hated local rivals, Mestre, created the ugliest club shirt anywhere in Italy. I think that's fair to say, no?
Orange, well, the black orange is in it is from Mestre, isn't it? So they've just imposed that.
For those
that
who don't know, Venezia, or Venice, is basically mostly a bunch of islands. Mm-hmm. And Mestre is the bit on the mainland where you have industry. And I mean, they're so close, but by the same token, these were two teams that had their own identity. You know, Venezia had been in Serie A for a bunch of years, many years ago. I think, am I right, they won a Coppa Italia too?
Yeah. Valentino Mazzola was part of that team before he moved to Torino and became part of the Grande Torino, a club with a big history and tradition, I suppose, relatively speaking.
And of course, since he's such a wonderful owner, after buying Mestre and talking about how he's going to reform everything, he immediately went, and Venezia have this stadium, the Penzo, which is on an island, and it looks kind of like a toxic waste dump.
It does not. Gab, it really doesn't. Okay, so admittedly, it's not very accessible.
It's the oldest stadium in Italy.
There you go.
Still being used.
And it essentially looks like they built it as a temporary structure and it's still there, kind of, 100 years on or whatever. It's right at the end, the archipelago of 128, I think it is, islands that make up the city of Venice. It's the furthest one out and it's sat there right next to a kind of like marina. So you've got these bobbing masts next to it. I always found it quite charming. And the nice thing about it is that teams have to go there by motoscafo. They arrive on these kind of slipper launches and come out. But anyway, we were going to talk about Palermo.
Nobody's put a screw into it. Since like the 1930s. That's the absurdity of it. And he goes in and, of course, he Pinocchio's his way, talking about he's going to build like a big stadium on the mainland, blah, blah, blah.
And well, he says, and we I think we can all agree, it is difficult often to get the red tape and the bureaucracy all in line to build a stadium.
Yeah, especially when you don't have any money and all you do is whinge and want the government to pay for everything for you. Yeah.
And he was like, everyone here, they're all tourists. I can't get anyone in the stadium to basically buy things. I want to build a new ground near the airport. I'm going to put one of my supermarkets in. Because remember, right. This is what Zamperini's fortune is from. He is the king of supermarkets. He
has Mercantoni Zeta.
Yeah.
MZ.
MZ.
La qualità e I prezzi più bassi d'Italia.
There you go. Campionato di calcio italiano. You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. In the midst of all of this, he takes Venezia from C2 to Serie A in 8 years and probably about 80 managers, and then he loads them up in a bus and takes over at Palermo, where more of the same was to come. In the shadow of Monte Pellegrino, the club that had had only a smattering, really, of top flight seasons in certainly their post-war history, were back in the top flight within two campaigns with Francesco Guidolin as manager and with a certain Luca Toni scoring the goals. They come up and they go straight into the UEFA Cup.
Yeah, and they paid, what, $6 million for Luca Toni to bring him from Brescia to Palermo. And that team set all kinds of records until they went down again. When was it? 2013. And they came up again and just completely romped their way back into the top flight. But that team, famously, I think it was we touched upon with Toni, had, what, 4 or 5 World Cup winners, part of the 2006 squad in it. Some cult heroes as well. Franco Pienza.
You're clearly not a Zamperini fan, Gab, which is unusual for you. But I'm sure that there are plenty of these. I know that there's one in particular you get very excited about. While looking at some of their past players, I found a Palermo 11, a kind of Zamperini-era Palermo 11, who they had lining up with Sirigu in goal, the back line of Darmian.
Future Paris Saint-Germain.
Mm-hmm. Darmian.
Future Manchester United.
Zaccardo. Barzagli.
World Cup winner. World Cup winner.
Grosso.
World Cup winner.
Vasquez.
Oh, Vasquez. He just too bad.
Mudo, yes. Sevilla star.
Have you
Mudo
seen,
Vasquez.
There is a clip on YouTube of Vasquez playing like a friendly for Palermo, where he nutmegs the same guy twice, and then as he goes past him, another guy comes to try and take the ball off him, he nutmegs him as well. 3 nutmegs in the space of about 5 seconds.
Also in midfield, Pastore.
Pastore!
A front three of Dybala, whatever happened to him. Luca Toni.
Future god and World Cup winner. Mm-hmm.
This man.
Cavani! Oh, uno, uno! Cavani! Un gol straordinario!
Cavani. And perhaps your favourite player of all time, right in the heart of it all, Gabriele. Eugenio Corini.
Eugenio Corini, il genio. The man they think of the genius.
Right.
The WWE superstar, known as the genius, of course, was inspired
by Eugenio Corini. So many sportsmen.
Many people don't know that.
Right. Well, and that's just 11. I mean, you would have a crowded bench, not least with the 30 or 40 managers that Zamperini had.
So, in all, he had 42 different managers between Venezia and Palermo.
See, now I've got various different numbers. So at Palermo, 16 years, 45 times he fired the manager, 34 managers involved because he would often bring a manager back and then fire them again. The figure I had for Venezia and Palermo, but about yours, was actually like in the 50s in 29 years. But what have you got again?
He goes out on a half century. But I think when Cellino catches up with him, Zamperini will buy another club just to keep his record.
Just for people who might not know, the reason it may seem like a weirdo thing that we do in Italy, because you saw it with Juric and so on. You will see it when Ballardini returns. The reason managers get fired and then come back in Italy is that Italian clubs, after they sack somebody, they don't like to go and agree severance, because they just kind of assume it's cheaper for me to keep this guy on contract and hope that he gets a job somewhere else in the meantime, because people are constantly getting hired and fired. Mm-hmm. And that way I might actually be due some compensation later than having to basically pay this dude to go away.
Well, Zamperini holds, even amongst the crowded field of Mangialanatori, he holds pretty much all the records. He is the only club owner to fire a manager after a victory twice in the same season. This was the 2015-2016 campaign when Giuseppe Iacchini got the bullet on the 12th match day. 7 games later, Zamperini fired Davide Ballardini after a victory.
Ballardini, who likes to go to Genoa to work on the Preziosi and get sacked, brought back, sacked again. Cagliari with Cellino back in the day, and Zamperini. I mean, he loves working for these Mangialanatori, as you say.
Mm, that campaign, by the way, 2015-2016, Zamperini, he's never going to beat that. 8 changes of manager that year. Iacchini, Davide Ballardini, Fabio Viviani, Giovanni Bosi, Giovanni Tedesco, who was alongside Guglielmo Barros Skeletto.
Oh, my, that was mental when he brought him over and he couldn't coach because he didn't have a license. I mean, that was...
And then you had Giovanni Bosi again, and then Iacchini back again, who'd started the whole chain off, but he wasn't finished. Then he brought in Walter Novellino, who he'd had back at Venezia. And then, yeah, and then finally, oh, it's Davide Ballardini for a third time.
Ballardini must be the most sacked manager in Serie A history, no?
You just know he's got a fetish for like certain... Well, you even look at him, right? The way he wears his stupid sunglasses 11 months out of the year and the shape. People said like, ooh, Ballardini, he's just like Sacchi because they both come from the same part of the world and neither one is hair. But no, he's nothing like Sacchi. He's basically a walking doormat. You know?
Can we, just while we're on the subject of Palermo, can we address the topic of the pink shirts? I'd always understood that the reason that they play in pink is that the original kit was red and blue and that it was badly laundered back in the early 1900s.
That was the... That's a story I heard. I don't know. I'm not from Sicily.
I'm very happy to stay with that one.
Yeah, it's a good story. But it is also true, I can also confirm in our second professional wrestling reference of this podcast... that kit was also the inspiration for the Hart Foundation.
Okay.
Bret Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart. This is so pink and black attack.
Yeah. Okay. So we touched on some of the players that were there in that period. And we should also mention, I mean, and whatever you think about Zamperini's methods, they brought success. They came up, they went straight into the UEFA Cup. That first season, Guidolin brought them up. Guidolin, who was kind of the Elizabeth Taylor to Zamperini's Richard Burton, though, they kept... They would fall in love, they would break up, etc.
By the way, you can't imagine two more distinct personalities, right? Guidolin is nerdy, super serious, super devout Catholic. All he talks about is football, his faith, and his bicycle, right? Mm. Nothing else.
Yeah, he loves like doing the Giro d'Italia, like what, a day?
Doing the Zoncolan.
A day before the stage happens,
Zamperini, on the other hand... Well, we probably touched upon, though, that he's, you know, sort of supposedly self-made entrepreneur, brash, loud, puts his logo with his initials on everything, might remind you of somebody. At one point, remember he got involved in politics?
He got the Tea Party.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, no, that and the pitchfork movement.
Mm. What was the pitchfork movement?
Movimento dei Forconi, it was called, right? And this is serious. Now, this is the stuff. Sicily's a wild and wonderful place. This is where he basically... at this sort of party of like know-nothings, and it was like this idea that like politicians, left, right, or center, they're always screwing us over. The only way to do this is to get our pitchforks out and our torches.
Chase them out of the village.
Them out of the village, yeah, like back to medieval times. And because there's all these layabouts in Italy who don't do anything and stuff, there's only people with time on their hands during the day. It's like you see people in bars and stuff and, you know, at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He got all these idiots to go. He gave them the pitchforks. I mean,
genuine
dangerous.
Pitchforks.
Yes. And they'd go and they'd halt traffic and they'd make noise whenever there was a camera about. In the end, it wasn't that many people, but it was so much noise. And it turns Zamperini into such a nuisance. With hindsight, I wonder if it wasn't a brilliant scam on his part to basically go and get, you know, local political favors and stuff. All right, you know, I'll get my pitchfork people to go away.
I'll hold them off.
Yeah, I'll hold them off for you. I'll negotiate, you know, with the angry villagers.
Well, Guidolin, I think on one of the occasions he was sacked, suggested that there's some contestazione, you know, there was a big protest in the Cordova which was aimed at getting rid of him, and he felt that was orchestrated by the club. Right. But Zamperini really needed no excuse to get rid of a manager. But as you mentioned, Guidolin probably... I think there are two, quote-unquote, great Palermo sides in the Zamperini era. There's Guidolin's, which gets them up and gets them into the UEFA Cup.
Mm-hmm.
In the first season, where they play West Ham in the first round.
Yep.
Tevez, Javier Mascherano, I think made their debut, was it, in the first game?
Possibly.
Alan Pardew.
Yeah, Pardiola. And they beat them at Upton Park, and then they absolutely wiped the floor with them 3-0.
3-0, yeah.
At the Favorita.
In fact, they were in the UEFA Cup for 3 straight years. I'd forgotten this, but they were a real force. You know, they were one of those teams that was kind of always there on the edges of the European places.
Until they kind of, for me, ended up symbolising how Italians just did not take the Europa League seriously when they played, what, FC Thun from Switzerland in the fourth qualifying round and decided just to not do anything and got knocked out.
Mm.
But the second one that I was going to mention, is Delia Rossi's Palermo side, which I think was probably the most hipster, most talented, in that it had, what, El Flaco Pastore, Josip Iliciclone, Ilicic.
You haven't mentioned Ilicic.
Well, there's loads of players. You know, we haven't mentioned Mikuli, the all-time top scorer for...
Mikuli, the man with the Che Guevara tattoo. The man who took on the might of Luciano Moggi and lived to tell the tale.
The man who bought a earring at auction that was Diego Maradona's for €25,000.
Magnificent.
Yeah.
Another player we haven't mentioned, Amaury. Do you remember Amaury? Crazy.
Who was sold for €22 million to Juventus. One of the flops of that, ill-fated post-Calciopoli time when they got back up.
Mm.
This was pre-Marotta. This was Alessio Secco, wasn't it?
Secco.
Yeah, Alessio Secco, who was the press secretary when I was in Italy. So
whose last name means dry.
Yeah.
Mm. Certainly two great periods and a whole incredible run of
By the way, Ani Ilicic,
yeah?
Once you finish listening to this podcast, or if you can multitask, do it now, there's a YouTube clip of possibly the greatest assist I have seen in Serie A history.
Okay.
And it's Ilicic doing like impossible, illogical things with his like bandy legs. You must remember this.
Yeah, so he does like a... it's against Chievo.
Chievo?
And
he's having Ilicic assist Palermo, like it'll come up straight.
He's surrounded by players and he like sort of nimbly moves past one and then he looks like he's going to do a Cruyff turn. But what he does is he lifts the ball over like two defenders doing that. And I think what sets up Pastore, it's a ridiculous piece of skill.
Who misses the shot, I think.
Yeah.
But right. Yeah.
Wait, once you finish looking at that, then do check out my favourite Serie A goal of all time. Unfortunately, all you can find of it is really, really bad, far away footage of it. A very wide shot.
Thank you, in front.
Yeah. So in front, who were producing basically the worldwide feed. But your favourite, Eugenio Corini, with a free kick. They're playing Regina. This is, I think, 2006. And ball floats in. Giuseppe Biava, who was, a centre-half?
Centre-back.
The ball, it's kind of behind him. So he dives forward and flicks it in with his heel over his head. Absolutely extraordinary. It's really hard to see how he does it because the footage is so bad, but it was just amazing. Anyway, yeah, that was the great Delia Rossi side that went to the Coppa Italia final with Inter, no?
Yeah, and this was a time when Palermo would regularly go to Juventus and win. I think they did it 3 years running with Pastore, Cavani, Ilicic. I mean, you have to look at some of the names in those Juventus sides that had just come up from the second division. Marco Motta, Grigera, Mohamed Sissoko, Thiago Mendes, who actually did pretty well at Chelsea and then went on to do well at Atletico. But
but he still had Buffon and Del Piero and all these other dudes too.
Milos Krasic, you know.
But the thing about Palermo in that run, and Palermo's always kind of been this conundrum, obviously, because football's massive in Sicily. But you've had this weird phenomenon in Italy where for 101 reasons, Juventus have historically been the biggest team in Sicily, despite being from 1,000 miles away.
For example, when they had to play UEFA, was it UEFA Cup or Champions League games out of, do you remember when they went down to Palermo and held matches there? And they sold the stadium out because...
I mean, whenever they go to the south, I mean, you remember those Crotone games that we've recently seen. I mean, there's that slightly derogatory saying of Juve in trasferta, Calabria deserta. Well,
right, which is... Right. Juve away from home, the streets of Calabria are empty.
It has to do with migration patterns in the 50s and 60s when a lot of these people from the south came up north to work in Turin. And although I never fully bought that justification because, of course, those people are all still in Turin. Mm. So I could see those guys being Juve fans, but I don't know. Is it their cousins who stayed behind? I don't know. But... it's always been an issue. Palermo is, by population, I think they're the sixth biggest city in Italy, fifth or sixth. And obviously Sicily is not a wealthy region, and obviously Palermo's had some very real issues and problems as a city. So it's always kind of been this holy grail, you know, can you unlock Palermo? Can you turn Palermo into...
this is what global future sports...
exactly. I'm sure that, you know, if you imagine what global future sports entertainment's prospectus to investors might have been, if it exists, and I don't know if it does, but if they were to do a roadshow, this would be part of it. They would talk about the potential of Palermo, a massive city, a football-mad population, right, a lot of tourism, international airport, all this jazz, and...
a team that's currently on top of Serie B and that very nearly came up to the top flight just last summer.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Got beaten by Frosinone in the promotion playoff 3-2 by essentially Frosinone throwing footballs onto the field every time Palermo broke up field.
Yeah, man of the match in those games were the Frosinone ball boys, who it was the reason why Frosinone started the season having to play away from the Benito Stirpe, because I think they played their first game, which was a home game in Torino, as punishment for the anti-sporting behaviour that their ball boys displayed.
It's extraordinary that that was the only thing that happened to them. But there you go. Well, anyway, I, for one, wish Palermo's new owners the best of luck at the Favorita with their attempts to get the team back in the top flight. One last thing, though, about Zamparini for now. Managers wasn't the only thing that he went through a lot of, by his own admission. About 5 years ago, he gave an extraordinary interview to the Gazzetta dello Sport where he said he'd had 1,000 sexual conquests. Do you remember this?
Well, I remember one of the players that he signed, right. And I think one of the things he admired about him was that he was a donaiolo. He was a bit of a ladies' man, which was Carl Lafferty.
Exactly, thank you, yeah. No, so he gave this, it was in 2015. He gives an interview to the Gazzetta and he said, he basically just started talking about all his former loves. He was a devout Catholic to begin with and so wanted to wait, and now he curses all the time and opportunities he missed. And he says he must have had 1,000 sexual encounters, starting at 16 when he lost his virginity to a teacher. He's been using Viagra for years. He says it's a wonderful...
he never signed Cassano.
Yeah, absolutely. He also says that he suggested... he put basically Sensi, which is quite a thought, and Cecchigori onto Viagra. Oh, wow. And he says, it's the best thing, not like Berlusconi, who has all those injections to keep his up. Wow. It was a magnificent interview.
I want to point this
the
out.
Quote, the headline was, "A me la gnocca piace moltissimo." How would you translate that?
La gnocca is like a hottie, yeah? yeah.
Wait, so if he's had more than 1,000 sexual partners, he's 77 years old, he's lost his virginity at 16.
Yep.
So that's an average of what, 16 or 17 a year?
Yeah, no, more than that, because that was all before he got married with his second wife, and he's very, very much monogamous. He was stressing
in between, in between wives.
Yeah. So
he just turned off the tap. Amazing.
Absolutely. We should probably move on to what happened last weekend, and perhaps more importantly, what's going to happen this Friday. We'll do that after this. So this weekend, well, this Friday night, actually, Juventus taking on Inter at the Allianz Stadium on the Friday, because Juve, of course, have Young Boys on whenever night that is next week, Champions League, and Inter. Absolutely,
the old lady with the young boys again.
Yeah, again. Yeah. And Inter have PSV.
They need to prepare, having already qualified, playing a team of like
But Inter
Shepherds
do, because they have this huge game with PSV. Anyway, for whatever reason they're playing on the Friday, I'm delighted, because it means that can focus on that. It's not going to have a billion other things going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. Inter 11 points behind Juve. They're not going to catch them.
Not this weekend.
Or any weekend, I'm thinking. But beating them in Turin, Gab, for an Inter fan, would that be almost as good?
They became the first team to beat Juventus at the Allianz Stadium back in the Bene Bene Andrea Stramaccioni days, when he was the...
poor old Strammer.
Child genius of the Italian game. But let's not forget, Inter played really well in these games last year. I think they drew at the Allianz before Christmas. And then they played that incredible game, at the end of April last year, when they were down to 10 men and leading against Juventus at San Siro. And then Juventus came back, Higuain scores that late winner, and basically the title race is done, because Napoli lost. The Pjanic game, where he should have been sent off.
Just a little bit.
Can they do it, Gab?
Yeah, of course they can.
No, go on, but you know what I mean. What do you think? Juve, after all, have just faced another of their big rivalries away at Fiorentina, and that went pretty well for them.
It certainly did.
Look, when Chiellini's scoring scissor kicks with his weaker foot, you know you're screwed.
3-0 Juve winning at Fiorentina last weekend. What do you think is going
to
happen?
I think it's more down to Inter than it is down to them. I mean, yes, there's a scenario where Cristiano is so disappointed at the mortal snub. And if you're anything funny, go check out Cristiano's sister's Instagram complaining about him not winning the Ballon d'Or again. But I think it's really difficult for, Inter can only really focus on one thing at a time. maybe two things. So I thought they played okay against Roma, and they certainly showed character and, you know, trying to go head to head. And that came after the huge psychological exertion of Wembley on Wednesday, where I thought they played really well, yeah, you know, by what they are against Spurs, and then ultimately they lost. But for them to do this three times in a row, because this is what we talk about when it comes to Inter, I think especially with Spalletti's team, right? I mean, Italian managers, and Spalletti's one who talks about getting, you know, the right psychological tension, which means sort of, you know, winding his players in just enough that they're sort of hungry and motivated, but then you do it too much and then, like, they sort of fall apart mentally. I don't know that they can do that. I don't know about, you know, Vecino, like, because it would be three games in the space of not many days for him. And I think a lot of things would have to fall into place. But, you know, maybe this is the game where all of a sudden he believes in Lautaro, makes his dad happy, and throws him a curve. I'd like to see something different from Inter. Like, I'd like to not see Perisic. You know,
yeah, and one player who's really in form at the moment is Keita Baldidiao, who's come alive in, I think he's got three in his last two games.
Absolutely.
And seems to have gone through that sort of integration period. I think their wingers, who they signed in the summer, Politano and Keita, have probably been their best, most impactful summer signings. I think in absolute terms, yes, Nainggolan and De Vrij are the better players, but those two guys. And we've seen, particularly on one side, Cancelo likes to get forward, likes to think of himself as someone who's basically an attacking player.
He thinks he's Dani Alves.
Yeah, I think there's space to be got at there. Bonucci doesn't like to mark in the box anymore. I think you can cross and get at them that way. I mean, that's where a lot of the goals that they've shipped so far this season have come from. And then you've got Mauro Icardi. And Icardi only needs half a chance to score two goals.
Particularly against Juventus.
Yeah. Player of the year, named on Monday by his peers, is the Gran Gala del Calcio.
I think purposely don't vote for Juve guys, but, you know. But, it's a good point. And I also wonder if Allegri isn't going to do his whole sort of psychological stuff and maybe not play Bonucci in this game, precisely for the reasons you state. This is not a good fit for Bonucci. And he's got so many options, and, you know, he's like, oh, look, I'm resting him, you know. Mm.
Yeah. All right, well, it's coming up on Friday. We'll react to that, of course, next week. One or two other thoughts. A quick word on Roma, who only drew and really should have had more. They had a very, very clear-cut penalty denied them before.
Was it that clear-cut?
It was absolutely clear-cut.
It was clear-cut on the VAR. It wasn't clear-cut. I mean, I think...
Well, that's... But they have VAR.
No,
I know. That was extraordinary that they didn't.
Totti went absolutely crazy after this game. Well, he wasn't crazy. I mean, he was just... He's being quite... He was joking around saying, what was the VAR doing? Yeah. Was he asleep? What game was he watching?
Yesterday, actually, you know, the VAR for, it's not used yet in the Premier League, but the VAR room for England is at
Stockley Park.
Stockley Park IMG, where I was yesterday. And it's a big sealed glass box, and it has like special part. You can't get in, you can't see in. It's like a self-contained little cell. I really want to see inside. But anyway, sorry, we digress. The question I was going to ask about Roma was that despite the fact that they maybe could have taken 2 points more, this was a very positive performance. Players out injured like Dzeko, but really better showings from the likes of Schick, a glorious kind of backheel pass to set up.
Under scored a great goal.
Under, yeah, absolutely.
Which, you know, was a bit of redemption for the miss that he had against Real Madrid. Zaniolo again was really impressive.
Earning what would have been that penalty had it been given. And Kluivert as well, I thought, did all right.
Yeah, I think there's some positives. And given what Di Francesco had complained about after the Real Madrid game, it's that when we concede, we stop playing. You know, they went behind twice in this game and came back and got themselves a point. But, you know, I think the big winners of the weekend, along with Juventus, would be Milan, who took advantage of Lazio dropping points against Chievo. Lazio currently in ritiro. Both Inzaghi brothers in a spot of bother at the moment. Obviously, Roma and Inter dropped points. And Milan, who played Ignacio Abate and Zapata at the back, somehow able to come back from behind and get a result against the flying Parma side. And again, Gattuso, it just seems to confound what I thought when he got the job. Three different systems in a week, and they've got, what, three results, and they've got this horrendous injury crisis. Higuain's been now suspended for all of this, and they keep finding way. Cutrone as well, doing well. So who needs Ibra?
They're in fourth place, ahead of Lazio, who could only draw with this podcast's favourite team, Chievo. Shout out to Chievo and their recently appointed manager, Mimmo Di Carlo, who's doing a fantastic job there, Gab. And also, I know you'll want to salute, especially after we waxed eloquent about Luca Toni being top scorer at 38, Sergio Pellissier with Chievo's goal. He's 39.
I have a bit of simpatico for Pellissier because of those nice words he dedicated to Giampiero Ventura when he left.
Mm.
But yeah, I think one thing we realize in Serie A is that, especially if you're on a bad team, if you're a big, strong, smart striker who, you know, as the joke goes, like, you know, you never had any pace, so you don't lose it. I mean, and you get your half chances on set pieces and whatnot, and you belt the ball from 30, occasionally it goes in. And that's why Pellissier
has got more goals into the other than Marco van Basten.
What?
All right, all
I love
right,
Pellissier.
All right. Shakwa tira boca. Wash your mouth out with soap. Don't mention. Don't.
Has he got more goals than Pippo Inzaghi, who, as you say, like his brother, is struggling? Bologna beaten 4-1 by Sampdoria, featuring another old timer, Fabio Quagliarella, who got a brace. And they're in the bottom three now, Bologna. Is he going to last the week, do you think, Pippo?
I think it's a really bad side that Bologna have got. Really average. They're one of the worst teams to watch in the league. They were last year, and I think Donadoni did a really good job to get them into sort of mid-table. The fans seem to turn on him, which I don't really understand.
Careful what you wish for. It's a classic case of that.
But
they thought they were getting Simone Inzaghi, who I've criticized, but is, you know, several orders of magnitude a better coach than his brother. Probably a better footballer too.
Yeah, because not as an Adil Rami.
Simone Inzaghi?
Better footballer than Pippo? Oh, I suppose in technical.
I think without question, yeah.
Okay.
Pippo Inzaghi had other qualities which made him a much more productive footballer. And
well, it depends what you mean by a better footballer. You know, the job that he did in football of scoring goals, Pippo was pretty exceptional at that.
Yeah, but it's a basic job of controlling
the ball.
That's
the famous story when he turned up to Italy and everybody else went, what competition winner is this? He can't trap a ball, he can't do anything.
I mean, yeah. Super Pippo.
He's unique, he's a different skin.
He did get Venezia, we mentioned before, promoted into Serie B and almost got them up last year. But what I would say, Gab, Adil Rami, the better half of Pamela Anderson, did say that whilst he was being coached by Inzaghi at Milan, that if he can do it, then I can do it as well. So unimpressed was he by the...
Joe Tacopina and his investors might have had a little bit more to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll call that a day then for this edition of Golazzo. Many thanks for being with us, Gab.
My pleasure.
And James.
My pleasure as always.
And you, listener, do make sure you join us as we delve into the rabbit holes of Italian football history once again. Do have yourselves a lovely time in the meanwhile. And from all of us here, it's arrivederci.
You've been listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. It's a Muddy Knees Media production, and for sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.